this week's adventure, The Logic of Murder.
You're going to die within the next few seconds.
No!
But before you die, you will have the privilege of seeing a technique in murder never before used in the history of man. I shall start now. This will be the perfect murder. And the simplicity of it will astound you. Look, all I have to do is this.
Mr. Harris, this adventure began one autumn evening in 1896, when Holmes and I were in our flat at 221 B. Baker Street. We'd had an unexpected visitor. He was a lean, pale chap, abnormally tall, with penetrating eyes. As he explained his grotesque mission, my amazement grew each moment.
My name is Forrest, Mr. Holmes. Dr. Nelson Forrest.
Most distinguished name, sir. One with which I'm quite familiar. May I present my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson?
How do you do, Dr. Fox?
Dr. Watson.
Don't you occupy a chair of medicine at Oxford, sir?
Indeed I do, but my civic duties prevent my being very active at the university. I'm also chief toxicologist at the coroner's office, Boar's Hill, adjacent to Oxford.
And the purpose of your visit, Dr. Forrest?
I've performed the duties of a coroner for decades, Mr. Holmes. I've performed more than 6,000 autopsies. I'm something of an expert on causes of death.
Intriguing background. Pray continue.
I've two associates, Chief Justice Wickham.
Yes, I know him well, Professor of Jurisprudence.
And Professor Edward Roberts.
Ah, yes, one of the world's foremost experts on logic.
We were enjoying a pleasant afternoon tea some weeks ago, the three of us. The conversation turned to the ancient problem of the perfect murder.
I've spent many a long evening ruminating over that problem.
The conversation became most spirited. Each of us made contributions. Wickham, a veritable genius on evasions of the law, made a few superb suggestions. I contributed, too, on the basis of my knowledge of causes of death.
And Roberts?
Roberts, our master of logic, fitted each step of the perfect murder into its proper place with breathtaking precision.
You mean to say, Dr. Forrest, that your trio has created the perfect murder?
Astonished.
No, gentlemen, not quite. Our objective was to construct a murder so ideally committed that it was absolutely impossible to know how the victim had died and impossible to identify the killer.
Good Lord, if anyone knew how to commit such a crime, why...
I think someone does, Dr. Watson.
Really?
We solved every problem for the would-be killer, except one. The final step called for a staggering feat of logic. It was a puzzle fit for our greatest minds. Well, our tea ended. Wickham and I forgot the problem. We felt it could never be solved.
And Professor Roberts, the logician?
Precisely why I've come to you, Mr. Holmes. I've known Roberts intimately for years. He has an insatiate passion for such things. He spends every minute of his spare time playing highly advanced forms of chess. Shogi, the Japanese version. Cylindrical chess. Three-dimensional chess. He has solved retrograde problems in chess that have been riddled since the 6th century Persians.
You mean, Doctor, you believe Roberts may have solved the last step of this perfect crime?
I do. It's a horrible accusation. Once knowing that last step, Roberts might commit murders endlessly without ever fearing that he'd be caught.
Why are you so certain that Roberts has solved it?
Mr. Holmes, that man could not sleep, could not eat, could not keep his sanity if he did not solve such a problem.
Yes, but even if he can commit the perfect murder, why should he attempt it?
The temptation is too powerful to resist, Dr. Watson. You're a man of science, sir. Surely you appreciate the ruthless driving force of the scientific mind? Professor Roberts would have to know if the murder were really perfect. He'd have to try it.
And what do you expect of me, Dr. Forrest?
I am a physician, sir, not a criminologist. I believe the menace is great. I've hoped you might see Professor Roberts. You might try to learn if he can commit the ideal murder.
Have you asked him yourself if he solved the puzzle?
Yes. He denies having thought of it since that tea. But his whole being is dedicated with a religious fervor to visiting weird, unexplored areas where the human brain has never ventured. He could not resist embarking upon so magnificent an odyssey of the mind.
I see. I accept the invitation, Dr. Forrest. Watson and I shall see your professor.
It's simple to find him. He lives with his young niece, Edith, at a cottage in Boar's Hill.
Come, Watson. We shall attempt to learn if Professor Roberts has become the one human being on Earth who knows the technique for an absolutely perfect murder.
A
I'm delighted to have so renowned a guest, Mr. Holmes. Welcome.
Thank you, Professor Roberts. I trust we're not imposing.
No. Quite the contrary. I've plenty of time. Matter of fact, I was just leaving for a few days' vacation with my niece. I've all sorts of spare time these days. Are you comfortable there, Dr. Watson?
Very, Professor, very.
For a gentleman with so many demands upon his services, surely this is a visit of vital importance.
It is, Professor.
I'm at your service, sir.
Professor, you entered into a discussion with two faculty associates of yours some weeks ago, Dr. Forrest and Justice Wickham.
But I see them so frequently. To which discussion do you refer?
It was a delightful afternoon tea. And the subject was murder, Professor. The flawless murder.
Oh, yes, I recall it. Evidently, it made a lasting impression upon them. Who spoke to you about it?
Dr. Forrest. Professor, one step in logic remained. One problem was unsolved. To arrive at the ultimate ideal technique for committing the murder. Is that correct?
It is.
Did you give the problem further thought?
No. None whatsoever. The problem was impossible.
Even for one of your gifts?
Mr. Holmes, surely you must know that the perfect murder is an illusion. It defies the infinitely petty scope of the human mind.
Uncle Edward, the luggage is ready. It's by the door. Oh, I beg your pardon.
Oh, this is my niece, Edith Marshall. Edith, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, Dr. John Watson.
How do you do, Dr.
Edith's been preparing us for our little vacation. Is everything ready, my dear?
Yes, Uncle Edward. I haven't the time to clean the house, though. I dislike leaving it so dusty. There's dust all about. On the bookshelves, in your chest set, on the mantel.
Oh, let it be, child. We shan't care. Mr. Holmes, was it solely because of that discussion you mentioned that you came here?
Solely.
I certainly do hope you won't take offense, but it strikes me as rather a fool's errand.
Does it?
Dr. Forrest is sometimes more of a nervous old woman than a professor of toxicology.
I always choose to follow the scent of murder, Professor, however faint and elusive.
What's wrong, Uncle Edward?
Nothing at all, Edith. Mr. Holmes and I were just chatting. That absurd problem of the perfect murder.
If they're off on a vacation, Holmes, perhaps we'd better...
Oh, we don't want to rush you.
Oh, it's quite all right.
Of course, this isn't entirely a vacation for Uncle Edward.
But why not?
Because you must read the minutes of the Board of Trustees meeting last week. You should have gone. I'm taking them along.
Oh, that tiresome thing.
We'd best dash along, Holmes.
I regret that your mission was not more fruitful, Mr. Holmes.
It's been enlightening, Professor Roberts. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Miss Marshall.
Good afternoon, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson. Uncle Edward.
Yes, my dear.
Please don't be upset, but...
Well, what is it?
You did tell Mr. Holmes the truth, didn't you?
The truth?
About not having worked out a way to commit a perfect murder.
Of course I told the truth.
I wish you'd never discussed it with Wickham and Forrest.
Why?
Well, ever since you did, I've had an awful feeling about it.
Really?
A kind of shadow's fallen over the cottage. I was never afraid to stay here before. But last night I couldn't sleep. I kept wondering if you'd solve the problem. I kept wondering what you might do.
Oh, dismiss it from your mind, Edith. Even if by some odd chance I should find the answer, what of it?
I don't know. I saw you in the garden yesterday, at twilight. It was very cold outside, but you were standing there without a coat or hat, and there was perspiration on your face.
Just your imagination.
No, I saw you quite clearly. I couldn't help but think...
Yes?
Never mind. I'm being foolish.
You've been working hard, Edith, you're tense. And we're both a bit bored. The atmosphere's oppressive. As soon as we reach the Cotswolds, those beautiful hills, you'll relax.
I hope so. I have been overwrought, all because of that stupid conversation and that gruesome problem. Shall we fetch our things and leave?
By all means.
Well, Holmes, for once I do believe you've taken us upon a futile journey. Not that I mind this carriage ride and the train back to London. I rather... Holmes, are you paying the slightest bit of attention?
No, my dear Watson.
You're not convinced by Professor Roberts' protest of innocence, are you?
One mixes the various elements in the retort, Watson. One lights the flame and soon the bruise begins to bubble. There were elements of our few moments with the professor of logic that should soon produce a fascinating compound.
I didn't notice anything peculiar.
Didn't you? The professor of logic was most illogical.
Was he?
Given a moment for further contemplation, I shall have crystallized my thoughts. But I must think fast. If the professor knows how to commit the perfect murder, he may be tempted to try it at any moment. Aha!
You have it, Holmes?
Turn back, driver. Back to Boar's Hill, to the professor's house where you found us. Quickly, quickly!
Do you believe the professor solved it, Holmes?
I'm sure of it.
How'd you know?
He remarked that he had a great deal of spare time.
Yes, yes,
Previously, Dr. Forrest informed us that Professor Roberts has a fanatic interest in advanced forms of chess.
Yes, so
yet,
he did.
Yet, with all this spare time, Edith, his niece, observed that his chess set was covered with dust. It had gone unused for a considerable period. Why, Watson? Why would an incurable addict of chess abandon it completely when he has ample time? Then consider the minutes of the trustees' meeting.
The minutes?
Yes. Edith reprimanded the professor for failing to appear at the meeting so that he's now obliged to read the minutes. Although he has so much time, the professor neglected a vital appointment. Why, Watson? Only one answer is conceivable. He's been so consumed by the desire to solve the riddle of the ideal murder.
Yes, you're right, Holmes. We must confront him with your conclusions. Yes, but while you've the evidence that he's been struggling with the riddle, how'd you know that he's found the answer?
Think, Watson. If he were innocent, if he were considering the problem merely as an exercise in mental gymnastics, he would have admitted to working on it, would he not?
Quite.
However, he lied. He pretended to have ignored that afternoon tea once it had ended. He could only have attempted that camouflage if he had an insidious motive. I should say he knows how to commit the perfect murder, and he intends to try.
Good Lord.
I should say he would choose for his victim a trusting individual who's quite handy. In short, his lovely young niece, Edith. Driver, can't your horses do better? Hurry, man! Hurry, hurry!
Dr. Watson, we're most impatient to return to your story.
Well, Mr. Harris, with the shocking realization that Professor Roberts knew how to commit a perfect murder and was probably about to try it upon his young niece, Holmes and I raced in our carriage back to the professor's cottage at Boar's Hill.
It's odd, Holmes. The professor answered so quickly when we first called on him.
Knock once more, Watson.
Yes. You know, he may have done away with Edith after we left.
Now he's vanished.
If he has, it'll be the first act of murder I shall never be able to prove, Watson. Merely indicting him on the basis of chatter at a tea party will be of no avail. We shall not be able to establish the cause of death, the motive, nor anything else.
Refuses to answer.
Well, this door's flimsy. I believe we have enough strength to force it.
Right you are, Holmes. Ready?
Ready.
Once more, Holmes. There we are.
Professor Roberts. Professor Roberts. Search the other rooms, Watson.
Yes, sir. No one in the bedroom.
Not in this kitchen.
That is empty, too.
They've gone, Watson. The professor of logic has made off with his niece to use her as his victim.
Could we possibly find them, Holmes? They said they were going on a vacation.
Yes, but where, Watson? Where? We must look at every corner of this cottage for a clue.
We about ransacked the whole place, Holmes.
Yes, and no indication of where he's taken the girl. There must be one. A human being cannot quit his quarters for a prolonged period without leaving traces.
Well, you see, they might have gone to Bournemouth for fishing. Or to Wales. Wales for the mountain air. They might have taken the waters in Malvern. Perhaps they just dashed over to the Cotswolds. You know, there are many small hotels.
There are many possibilities, but we've no time at all, and we must know exactly where.
I've gone through the closets, through his books, his desk, the niece's bureau.
We haven't emptied the waste paper basket, Watson.
Capital notion, Holmes. I'll do it. See here. Notes, cancelled check, and advertisements.
Ah, that envelope.
Just the corner of an envelope. The rest has been hopelessly torn away. Just the last portion of where the return address was printed.
May I see it? E-R-S-E-T-S-H-I-R-E.
Ursature? What word ends in Ursature? You know, Holmes, this letter might have been written to the professor for any purpose whatsoever.
Yes, Watson, but if it should happen to have come from a well-established resort, we might reasonably assume it was correspondence involving a reservation for the professor and his niece.
Well, one of the vacation spots I can think of ends in Ursature. There's Malvern, there's Bournemouth, there's Isle of Wight.
The word that ends that way is Somersetshire. The Cotswolds, the nearest and most popular holiday resort in this area. We'll do just as well by carriage as it... as we stop to wait for the train.
Certainly, Holmes.
Fetch a cab. Run, Watson, run.
The countryside here in the Cotswolds is exquisite, isn't it, Uncle Edward?
Yes, Edith. It's enchanting.
You don't seem to be enjoying it.
Oh, but I am, my dear, I am.
You seem distracted.
Do I?
You haven't been thinking of that awful problem, have you?
Perhaps.
Uncle Edward.
A great weakness, Edith. The problem I can't solve becomes an obsession. You should know that. I become tantalus, thirsting in hell, up to my chin in a pool of water which recedes when I attempt to drink.
You must use your willpower. You must forget it.
It's too late.
What do you mean?
I did lie to Holmes.
You what?
I lied. I have been thinking about how to commit the perfect murder ever since that strange afternoon. It seems almost unreal now. Almost as if part of it were a dream. I have been thinking of it since I sat there in the sun with the two professors of tea, idly chattering, never realizing what seeds were being planted in my mind.
Did you solve the puzzle, Uncle Edward? Do you know how to commit a perfect murder? Do you know? Do you know? Answer me. Answer me!
Yes. Yes, I do.
What do you intend to do about it? Will you tell Mr. Holmes? Will you tell Wickham or Forrest? The police, perhaps?
Let me be, Edith. I've been under a great strain all these weeks. I've hardly slept. Go back to the hotel. Leave me. I want to walk by myself in this cool air.
Very well, Uncle Edward. But you can't keep this terrible secret to yourself. What do you intend to do about it?
I shall do nothing. For the moment.
Well, our carriage is coming into the Cotswolds, Holmes. Of course, one difficulty remains.
Difficulty, Watson?
There must be some 15 or 20 hotels, camps, and other places where the professor may have taken his niece in these hills. Now, how do we determine which spot that he's chosen for the murder?
There'll be a way, Watson. There'll be a way.
Confound it, Holmes. If you've an idea of how to find this killer, then tell me. This is hardly the time to play cat and mouse.
Calmly, Watson, calmly. There must be a way of learning their whereabouts. If we're not too late to save the girl's life already.
Clark?
Yes, ma'am.
Does this hotel send telegraphic messages for its guests?
Certainly, ma'am.
I should like to send this message immediately. Can you read my handwriting?
To Mr. Sherlock Holmes, 221B Baker Street, London. Uncle Edward has solved the riddle. Urgent you come here. We are in the Cotswold St. George Hotel. Do not lose a second.
That's right. Send it now, would you, and put the charges on my bill.
Yes, Miss Marsh. Thank you.
Clark. Clark.
Yes. Oh, Professor Roberts.
I saw my niece here at the desk. Did you do what she wanted?
Yes, I'm sending the telegram for her now.
Telegram? May I see it, please?
Here it is, Professor.
Oh, it isn't necessary to send that. Just tear it up.
Well, but, Professor...
I said tear it up.
Anything you say, sir.
Stop here, driver.
Well, this is the Cotswold District, Holmes. Now where to?
I shall make an inquiry at this first hotel, Watson.
What sort of inquiry?
I shall ask which hotel in this area is equipped with health bath facilities.
What on earth?
You remember when we first visited the cottage at Boar's Head? Edith said their luggage was ready and standing by the door.
Yes, quite. I saw it.
My dear Watson, you saw, but you did not think. You should have noticed that the professor's luggage was covered with labels from hotels he'd been to previously.
I saw the labels, too.
As you and I have been riding, I've run quickly through the labels I'd seen. I realized instantly that every hotel the professor had visited in the past was equipped with health bath facilities, obviously a preference of his. The remainder of our problem is negligible. We shall dash into this hotel and ask which spot in these hills has a Turkish bath and similar equipment. Wait for us, coachman. Don't leave your post.
Ice for your head, Uncle Edward. Feeling better?
Oh, yes, Edith, much better. So kind of you to bring it to my room.
I've wrapped it in this towel I found in your bathroom. There you are.
Oh, it feels good. splitting headache.
You must take a nap. I'll leave you.
I don't think you can leave, Edith.
Why not?
I've locked the door.
You what?
I've locked the door.
Why did you do that?
I didn't want you to go.
Uncle Edward, don't get up. Stay in that sofa. You're not well.
There isn't a thing wrong with me.
But you asked me to bring the ice. You said a headache.
A very cheap deception, Edith, but practical enough. I locked the door to be sure you wouldn't run off. You see, I've not only worked out how to commit the perfect murder, but I cannot resist the temptation to see if my theory is correct.
You're playing a game with me.
No, not at all. Try the door, Edith. It is locked, isn't it?
You've gone mad.
I fought this temptation, Edith. I did not want to know the answer to the problem. I was afraid I'd want to try it once I knew. And then I solved it. I'm convinced. The chances of anyone's learning the cause of your death...
My death?
Yes, yes, dear. The chances of their learning the cause of your death or of ever accusing me of it are non-existent. There is a way to kill you that fulfills those seemingly impossible requirements.
Let me out! Let me out
Don't
of here!
Don't scream, Edith. Perhaps you didn't notice I selected a room in an abandoned section of this huge hotel in a distant tower.
You couldn't do it. You couldn't.
I thought that myself. But can you appreciate what an achievement this will be for me? Can you understand how I had to know the answer? And now that I do, how I must confirm it?
They'll find me here in your room.
Oh, will they?
Sherlock Holmes knows I went off with you.
It's a long way from there to proving I did away with you. You forget. This is the ideal murder, Edith. There are steps I shall take after you are dead.
I know. The window. I'll get out that
you
way.
You can't open it. I tend to that. You'll also notice that before you came, I cleared the room. Nothing is available for you to use as a weapon against me. Now you're going to die, Edith, within the next few seconds.
No!
But before you die, you will have the privilege of seeing a technique in murder never before used in the history of man. I shall start now. The simplicity of it will astound you. All I must do is...
You'll do nothing, Professor Roberts.
Oh.
I brought the law with me. Seize him, officer.
Come on, Professor.
He was going to
Go
kill
on,
me.
Officer.
Don't try any tricks, Professor.
No, no, you'll never know.
The Professor will fall through the window.
Well, now, Holmes, now that we've returned to Baker Street, I say we should enjoy a well-deserved rest, eh? Oh, now who could that be?
Come in.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes?
My name's Briggs. I'm counselor for the estate of Professor Roberts. Buried him this morning, you know.
What brings you to Baker Street, Mr. Briggs? Oh, I'm sorry, this is Dr. Watson.
I have no business with him, just with you. We found this envelope here in a steel box for the late professor. It says no one is to open it but you. So go on, open it. Let's be done with it.
Very well. As soon as I remove this sealing wax. Aha.
What's it say, Holmes? What's it say, Holmes?
Watson, Professor Roberts writes that he bequeaths his technique for committing the absolutely perfect murder to me. He wrote this to be read by me should he die before I did. He wishes to be remembered by posterity as the creator of this technique, the first in all recorded time to discover it. He describes how to commit the perfect murder. Just three sentences, the most surprising three sentences I've ever read. And he's right. He's 100% right.
What are they, Holmes? What does the paper say?
Nothing, Watson. Nothing.
Careful, Mr. Holmes. You hold that paper too close to the fireplace and you'll burn it.
Exactly what I intend to do, Mr. Briggs. There.
Horace, but Mr. Holmes, you burned it. We'll never know what the paper says. Oh, Holmes. How do you commit the perfect murder?
That, my dear Watson, is something I must try desperately to forget. And something about which the world must forever wonder.
Dr. Watson, and did Mr. Holmes ever reveal that secret?
No, Mr. Harris. Never.
Oh. Well, you've a revelation you must make, though, Doctor.
Do I, Mr. Harris?
You must tell us a bit about the adventure you've planned for next week.
Well, next week, Mr. Harris, I shall relate to you the adventure of the ancient queen. It involves a crooked knife, a statue's fist, and a certain society. And I'm quite sure you'll enjoy it.